Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the full year results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, the 23rd of August, 2017. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Matt Bekier, CEO. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Raphael, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm joined here today by Chad Barton, our CFO, and we'll take you through the highlights of our presentation. If I can ask you to turn to page number 4, where we have the key points set out. First of all, we're pleased to report a very strong statutory result. Our NPAT is up 36% to $264 million. On a normalized basis, we're down 11%. You know the reasons for that. We had a softish first half. The North Asian disruption is lingering on. And of course, the strong win rate on our traditional methodology translates into softer normalized results over time. Now, the strong result could not have been achieved if it hadn't been for very strong cost management. Our operating expenses are up only 1%, and we have continued to focus on keeping those expenses down. There's a page in the appendix on page 34 that sets out our operating efficiency, and I think it's a real credit to the whole company that we've been able to keep that number where it is. The other sort of highlights are the investments that we've made in the first half, which were established at the cost of some disruption, helped us to turn around the performance in the second half. Both Sydney and the Gold Coast are up nicely in the second half. Third, the VIP business strategy of diversifying our source markets is getting good traction. So at the aggregate level, our front money for the VIP business was up, but most pleasingly, the business ex-North Asia was up 94% on the previous period. That's a very strong performance. But again, that growth in revenue or in front money would have been meaningless if it hadn't been for the extremely good work of our credit teams. And we continue to have an exceptionally good and clean credit book. And, you know, this year where we had such high win rates, we were able to collect at a phenomenal rate. So it's a big credit to the team. In terms of our other capital projects, I'm pleased to note that they're all being delivered within budget, and that the Newtown and Gold Coast, which will be the catalyst for our performance in the medium term, is on track to open before the Commonwealth Games. Along with the strong balance sheet position that we have, these factors have led the board to declare a final dividend of 8.5 cents, which is a record dividend of 16 cents for the full year. If I can ask you now to turn to page number 6, where we discuss the performance of the various properties in more detail. First up, Sydney. In Sydney, as you know, first half we had some disruption, nice turnaround in the second half. And you see that in the little bar chart on the bottom right-hand side of the chart of the page number 6. So 0.6% of the first half translated into 6% growth in the domestic business in the second half, which is driven both by settling down the existing business plus the new facilities that we've established. And this was achieved in the context of a softer consumer background. So our visitation for the whole period was only up 1.4%, and spend per customer was only up 1.8%. So we've clearly taken share in that market. The VIP business in Sydney was down, largely driven by the North Asian disruption. But it's pleasing to say that for the second year in a row, Sydney is now the largest VIP destination, and that sort of gives us the confidence that we are doing the right thing with our investments that we're putting back into Sydney. Operating costs is, as I said earlier on, particularly well mentioned in Sydney, and that didn't come at the expense of customer service. So I'm really proud of the achievement that the team has delivered by getting us the Forbes, by winning the Forbes 5-star rating as the best hotel in Sydney. And that's established a new benchmark of customer service that we seek to replicate in our other properties and in other parts of our business. Over the page, on page number 7, we look at the performance in Queensland, and it's a similar story to Sydney. But it's more accentuated because it's really all of the turnaround and the growth is really concentrated in the Gold Coast. The graphic on the bottom right-hand side again shows you the turnaround. Negative growth in the domestic business of minus 3.8% has translated into positive growth of 2.3% for the second half. As I said, that's heavily skewed towards the Gold Coast. Overall, Queensland visitation declined, particularly in the first half, but spend per visitor was up, which is a reflection of the high quality new facilities and the traction we're getting with that. An absolute highlight for us in Queensland has been the growth of the VIP business. We had turnover of $6.2 billion, which is up almost 200% on the previous period. That's really just the traction of the new facilities, and it augurs well for our investment program into premium gaming into the Gold Coast. We think it is a fantastic destination, and we look forward to continue to invest there and reap the benefits from it. Slots, of course, is one of the key areas, focus areas for our company. And on page number 9, we just set out the market share achievements for the year. In Sydney, on the right-hand side, you see we've achieved a record market share of 9.6%. Gold Coast is also up nicely. Brisbane is back to 2014 levels. So Brisbane is clearly a focus area for us. And we have addressed this now by establishing, appointing a new chief operating officer or a chief operating officer to the property, whose sole responsibility will be to stabilize the performance in the property. We have committed to an upgrade of the premium gaming areas in Brisbane to help us between now and the opening of Queen's Wharf. And we're working very hard with the marketing teams to change the value proposition more towards the Southeast Queensland value proposition to our customers and make sure we can leverage the new facilities in the Gold Coast into the Brisbane market more effectively. Loyalty has been another focus area for us, and on page number 10, we set out some of the progress that we've made. You may recall that we've launched it in November 2016, and you see there in the graph on the bottom right-hand side of the page how since the launch, pretty much in every metric that we apply, the perception of the program with our customers has improved. And that's a good indication of the program becoming more effective. Another way to look at it is to look at the growth of the private gaming rooms, which are basically only available to carded customers, and compare that growth to the main gaming floor. And you see that private gaming room growth has been very strong, particularly in the second half, since we launched the program. But there's a lot more for us to do in that space, and I think I've said on previous calls it will be a journey that will take many, many years, and every year we expect to make more progress. For the next 12 months, we'll focus on improving further the customer experience, particularly around the member sign-up process and our digital presence. We're working very hard with our CRM and marketing teams in the properties to come up with a more effective engagement of the customer. And to do that, we have just appointed, for the first time, a chief marketing officer at the executive level to really take care of that function end-to-end, and I expect him to give it to accelerate the improvements that we're making in this space. Let me now turn to the international business, which I've already touched on in parts. I'm on page number 11. I'm happy, and we are happy with the performance of that business in the circumstances. The right-hand side chart on the top shows you that front money has continued to expand over the last 5 years at a compound rate of about 13%. Relative to last year, it was up by 3.4%, but because of the win rate, that front money hasn't really translated into turnover. So turnover on a normalized basis is down. Pleasingly, though, turnover from our diversification strategy, ex-North Asia, has almost doubled. So clearly we're getting traction there, and I think there's a lot more we can do in that space. As I said in the introduction, but just generating revenue is not enough. We've had a very, very good year in our collections, and we've been very pleased with the conversion to cash that we've achieved in a year where the win rate was so strong. Now, the focus for us here is to do more of what we've been doing for the last little while. So we want to add new markets and new sales teams in the premium mass area in particular, and in entering new markets, as I said earlier. And we are revisiting our business models in servicing this market. I think what's clear to us is that the customers we're bringing in, our competitive edge, is a sort of mid-range VIP, which means, for example, that we have to up the presence of VIP hosts and customer service capabilities in the properties. But we also have to revisit our aircraft strategy. We probably need fewer of the aircraft that we have, because that type of customer is less likely to come. So with that, I want to hand over to Chad to take you through the numbers. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Good morning, everyone. Just on slide 13 now, I'm recapping some of the highlights that Matt's raised this morning already. Looking at the statutory results first, net profit after tax is up 36% on the prior year. The results are a tale of two halves, with growth in the second half driven by positive customer response to our enhanced properties, the new loyalty program, as well as a high win rate in our international business. Domestic gaming revenues was up 4.6% in the second half, with Sydney and the Gold Coast both up high single digits. Actual international VIP revenues were up 7.3%, with a strong win rate of 1.59% compared to 1.2% in the PCP. Front money was also up 3.4%. Non-gaming revenues grew 4.7% in the second half as disruption eased and yields increased from newly refurbished rooms. Turning to costs now, gaming taxes, levies and commissions were 5% lower on a statutory basis due to lower international VIP turnover. Operating costs continue to be well managed, up only 1% for the year. This is after absorbing a 7.6% volume growth in domestic gaming, additional costs associated with a loyalty program relaunch, and wage inflation. Over $90 million in cost reductions and efficiencies have been delivered across FY16 and FY17 to offset CPI cost growth, driving costs as a percentage of revenue from 47% of statutory revenue in FY13 to 40% in FY17. Profit before tax growth of 41% has driven tax up 41% on a statutory basis. The effective tax rate of 30.4% is consistent with the prior year. And we've had significant item expenses of $8.9 million relating to the fleet rationalisation of our aircraft as a result of the North Asian market disruption. Looking at normalised results now, the difference between the normalised and statutory results is due to the actual international VIP win rate of 1.59% being above the theoretical win rate of 1.35%. As you will note, with the actual win rate being higher than the theoretical, the normalised revenue and earnings are lower than the statutory results. We have consistently only normalised international gaming revenues and taxes. No other costs such as commissions or OPEX is normalised. International VIP revenues declined 19% due to lower volumes following the impact of the market uncertainty in North Asia. Our diversification strategy mitigated this impact, with turnover excluding North Asia up 101% on the prior year. Of particular note, in the Gold Coast, international VIP turnover was doubled prior year to $6.2 billion, giving us further confidence in the strategic investments being made there. Now on to slide 14, looking at our balance sheet. Cash conversion remains strong at 97% of EBITDA. Trade and other receivables increased 48% due to the timing of international VIP volumes in June. Receivables past due greater than 30 days old of $33 million is consistent with the prior year, and over 80% of this balance is less than a year old. Investments in associates increased by $183 million, This relates to our investments with our joint venture partners in Queen's Wharf Brisbane and the Sheraton Mirage acquisition in the Gold Coast. Net debt of $787 million is up $313 million on the prior year, reflecting the increased capital expenditure and JV investments. The balance sheet remains strong, with gearing remaining conservative at 1.3 times net debt to EBITDA. Turning now to funding on page on slide 15. We have undrawn bank facilities of $201 million at 30th of June, with an average debt maturity profile of 2.3 years. Given our continued strong cash flow and credit metrics, we have today announced the restructure of 73% of our 2011 USPP notes and related hedges. The restructure extends the group's debt maturity profile and reduces financing costs from FY18. The group estimates that the average blended cost of debt on all USPP notes has reduced from above 9% down to approximately 5%. This will result in an underlying interest expense reduction of around $17 million, excluding one-off costs, as a result of the restructure. The average drawn debt maturity profile post-restructure is 5.2 years, with expanded undrawn facilities now totaling $320 million. The group expects to incur a one-off loss of $30 to $34 million post-tax in FY18, associated with the restructure of the notes and related hedges. Finance costs are expected to be $40 to $45 million in FY18, reflecting the continued capital investments, as well as reduced capitalised interest as capital works on the Gold Coast are completed. Turning to slide 16 now, CapEx. The group has made good progress on capital investment projects across Sydney and the Gold Coast, delivering new and refurbished product on budget. The chart on slide 16 shows the investment in our properties since 2010, excluding joint venture contributions. As you can see, this year is the highest in company history at $420 million, up 37% on prior year and in line with previous guidance. We expect CapEx to be at similar levels in FY18. In addition to this CapEx, there's an additional $100 million in joint venture contributions for Queen's Wharf and the First Tower in the Gold Coast expected in FY18. Depreciation and amortisation in FY18 is expected to be in the range of $180 to $190 million following completion of these projects. In FY19 and FY20, we will see a decline in the capital expenditure of the group, but an increase in the joint venture contributions to Brisbane and the Gold Coast as these major investments ramp up. Turning to slide 17 now, and this sets out our financial metrics since 2013 with multi-year revenue, earnings and dividend growth. To conclude, the group has achieved record statutory net profit after tax, up 36% on PCP, and 33.4% compound annual growth over the last 5 years. The business has demonstrated resilience during the year following a difficult first half, showing positive momentum in half two, building on the investments that we've made in our properties and the loyalty program. We have continued to reward shareholders with a 28% dividend compound annual growth rate over the last 5 years. Our balance sheet also remains strong, enabling continued execution of our strategic growth plans, as evidenced by our gearing and interest coverage ratio now at 10.1 times. I'll now pass back to Matt.
Thank you, Chad, and well done on those USPPs. It's a delicate path you tread with the previous CFO in the room on that one. But let me turn to page number 19, where we set out our priorities. And I would describe it as, look, our strategy is very clear and executable. We've got three properties with exciting development plans. That's what we need to execute against. We need to monetize on the tourism opportunities in front of us, leverage loyalty, and continue to improve our customer service and efficiency at the same time in these three properties. That's what the strategy is. That's what's in front of us. And so 2018 is just totally dedicated and allows us to totally focus on executing against that plan. In terms of trading, in the early weeks of 2018, it's pretty much comparable to what we've seen in the previous period. We have a little bit of volume growth, which is a bit volatile because of the win rates that we can experience over short periods of time. As we look into the first half, though, I'd say that Sydney should not expect any material disruption. In Brisbane, there won't be any material change to the accessibility of the site either. In the Gold Coast, we have some hoardings up right now as we're refurbishing some food and beverage facilities and expanding the main floor. Those hoardings will start to drop off from October. And the real catalyst, of course, will be the new facilities that come in stream in the Gold Coast from Christmas onwards until the Commonwealth Games in April. So on page number 20, we describe the development plans for each one of our properties at the high level. On page 21, we set out in more detail the milestones for Sydney. So I'm going to ask you to turn to that page. So that basically says that we would expect, if we get our planning approvals through in time, to be able to open our Sovereign Room expansion and upgrade with the associated food and beverage and entertainment facilities, to have that all done by fiscal year 2021. And then the additional tower, if we get with the Ritz-Carlton in it, if we get the planning approvals in time, to have that opened 12 to 18 months after that. On page 23, we set out the milestones for the Gold Coast. So this half, we are very focused on completing the work on the new tower. We're also starting with the pre-sales for the additional residential and hotel tower that we're planning to build on the site. The early expressions of interest process is giving us confidence that that will be successful, but we'll see how we go until the end of this first half. As I've previously said, we won't go ahead with this tower until or unless we get appropriate pre-sales levels. By April 2018, the new tower will be completed and fully commissioned in all its aspects, and then we would expect by FY21 to have the additional residential and hotel tower to open up. On page number 25, we then set out the key milestones for Queen's Wharf. At Queen's Wharf right now, we are in demolition. That will move into excavation later on this year and early next year. We still expect to open up the integrated resort in calendar year 2022. So in summary, if I can just sort of conclude the outlook for 2018. In summary, 2018 is a year where we make important progress in our group-wide capital program and transformation. By the end of this year, one of our three properties will be largely done, and we'll then be able to focus to drive growth and earnings out of that property while we're completing the transformation of the other two properties by 2022. That's sort of the agenda for us, and we are excited about executing against it. With that, our formal presentation concludes, and we're opening up now for questions. So if I can hand back to you, Raphael.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Your first question comes from Donald Carducci of JP Morgan. Please ask your question.
Good morning, everyone. I just had a quick question on Sydney. How much of that second half growth is due to increased floor capacity of tables or MTGMs, or is this truly like for like?
I think it's a mix there, Don. We obviously, the first half, highlighted the investments in the main gaming floor expansion that we had, including the new Vantage area as well, which is the entry-level PGR for electronic gaming in Sydney. And so without doubt, there's two elements. There's a reduction in disruption that's happening post completion of those activities in the first half. And then and growth we've seen now, the benefit of the expansion in product on multi-terminal games as well.
Okay, thank you. And one more, what's the strategy going forward for marketing in North Asia? Are you going to start targeting new customers now?
Look, the North Asian strategy in the short term won't look any different from what we've done over the last 6 months. We think, as we've reflected on our VIP strategy, we think that the real sweet spot for us is a customer that's diversified, that wants to do more than just gamble in gamble, as somebody who seeks out tourism experiences. Therefore, we are focusing on a customer that probably looks more like a super high-end tourist customer who enjoys gaming. And that customer comes from, across Asia, in fact, across the world. So you shouldn't expect a dramatic change in our strategy. I think what we'll see is some tailwinds because, looking at Macau and the turnaround in Macau will obviously expand the market again. But we are not reversing our strategy.
Great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Matt Ryan of UBS. Please ask your question.
My first question is just on the outlook statement. I think previously you've sort of given us a quantitative trading update. Can you talk through, I guess, the rationale for not doing that this time? And also, I think at the first half 17 result, you called out a weak PGR win rate at that stage. So just thinking about moving through this current period, would you expect for that sort of headwind that you're calling out this time to dissipate as we get through the period?
Matt, thank you. Look, I think the fact that we're not providing specific numbers is really a reflection of the fact that, if you take, for example, the second half last year where we reported double-digit growth in the first 6 weeks that then turned around very quickly, that just creates volatility in the expectation and we need to explain too much. The way I would think of trading is, look, nothing's really changed from the way things looked in the second half. We've got the same facilities. There's no more or less disruption than we had during that period. If you're thinking of the comp, the first 6 weeks of the first half were probably the strongest we had last year, and then disruption really kicked in. So, there's a fair bit of moving parts. The fact that the win rates and the PGR is kicking around, it's coincidental, but that just happens to be in the same period every time.
Thank you. And just looking at the one-off costs, I guess, that you incurred in FY17, there were loyalty program relaunches and new areas that you put through. Do you have an idea on, I guess, underlying cost inflation for this year, and in particular wage inflation? Because I understand that you might not have any wage freezes at the moment. So would, I guess, a CPI type number be an okay number to use for wage inflation?
Yeah, it's probably a bit more. So we've just settled the EBA in Brisbane, and that probably looks more like 3%. We have an EBA that's on the table in New South Wales, which probably looks not that different. So it's more than CPI. The fact that, and then in the corporate and salaried functions, it's probably going to be a bit less than that. But, more than CPI. That's the first observation. The second one is, we sort of had made deliberate investments in last financial years in the areas that you described. This financial year, there's going to be less discrete investment of that nature, but we are planning to increase our marketing spend above the line. It's one area that we have held back, but now that the properties have stabilized and disruptions behind us, we will be more active. But, it's not huge amounts of money.
Okay, thanks very much.
Your next question comes from Larry Gandler of Credit Suisse.
Hi, guys. A few questions, if I can. I think during the presentation, Matt, you mentioned that you might target premium mass internationally. I'm just wondering what sort of hurdles are there in addressing that market, and one that maybe you could talk to specifically is the movement of cash into Australia, you know, carrying large sums of money, because premium mass I didn't think would play on credit.
Yeah, for us, premium mass is entirely cash. And so we don't provide any credit into premium mass. Mm-hmm. Premium mass for us, you know, we would like to see premium mass make up 25% of our international BRP business. Right now, it's still in the high single digits, right? So there's a lot more further to go. The money transfer on premium mass, that, you know, that follows standard AML procedures. It has to go through the international banking system, has to be registered as appropriate, which, you know, from our point of view, makes life a lot easier for us.
Okay, so it wouldn't be people carrying their tourist dollars on the plane or Amex checks. It'd be wire transfer.
If they are, they still need to comply with AML regulation when they enter the country.
Yep, but you'd expect wire transfer to be the primary means.
Oh, look, we've had several thousand customers out of that segment. It's vastly wire transfer.
Right. Okay. Great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, and just in terms of Gold Coast, Commonwealth Games clearly coming up, you must have some visibility to forward orders and forward bookings, maybe even for the new hotel. What sort of demand are you seeing? And in anticipation of the games?
Yeah, the games look good for us, but we are one of the main sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we weren't busy, we'd have a problem.
Yeah.
I should also note that the Sheraton Mirage, which the joint venture has acquired, is the official family hotel of the Commonwealth Games, so that's totally booked out as well. So, you know, that period is going to be phenomenally busy for us. The opportunity, I think, is to leverage the lead into the Gold Coast and the run, you know, the period afterwards, to continue to leverage on the awareness that we're building through the Commonwealth Games. I should also note that the games are during a holiday period, which is busy for the Gold Coast anyway.
Okay, and just Chad, maybe just the accounting on the on the Sheraton Mirage, does that come through from when and how?
Yes, that's in the results. There is already disclosed in there as an equity investment. So
yep.
The results are in there for the trading period, effectively February through to June.
Okay,
so they
great,
don't
thanks.
See that the EBITDA line, they're below the line.
Right. Okay, great, thanks.
Your next question comes from Mark Wilson of Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much. Just wondering if you could elaborate on the VIP side, whether, you know, particularly over the in the second half, you have had a pickup in incoming inquiries from both players and junk food operators from North Asia, just given that the strength in the region and we've seen the resolution with Crown?
Look, if you look at the VIP numbers last year, we were sort of tracking out of North Asia relative to prior periods pretty much at the same level until October. And then, you know, we dropped by about 40%. For the full year, those numbers improved a little bit, and they continued to strengthen through the year. But, you know, we dropped a long way in November and December, and it's going to take a little while to climb out of that hole. We've been able, as we've discussed, to mitigate some of that through the diversification, the growth of the diversification, but, you know, that came from a very low base. I want to remind you that 2 years ago, 87% of our VIP business came out of in the North Asian-based junkets. So we were able, you know, it takes a lot of growth from a small number to really make make a difference here.
Sure, thanks. And just on the aircraft rationalization strategy, what are you proposing there, and do you have more work to do on the cost side given the outlook?
So, Mark, on the aircraft rationalization, we currently have 3 planes. We will be, by the end of next financial year, down to 2 planes, but 2 relatively new aircraft, so that will be more efficient than the existing aircraft that we have in place as well. And so, you know, outside of that, at this point in time, from a cost rationalization within VIP, that's been the main focus so far. But we continue to monitor that business and the volumes closely.
Right. Is that just a lease expiry, Chad?
Yeah, so we had 2 of our existing aircraft leases expire towards the end of FY18. And so we've decided to terminate those leases then and replace 2 aircraft with 1 moving forward.
Great, thanks. And Chad, just while I've got you there, just on the CapEx, what are the key components there for fiscal 18?
Oh, the biggest component, single component without doubt, is the completion of Gold Coast, the new Suites Hotel. Within that one is by far the biggest component. Next year, we have one of the new aircrafts in next year as well as some of the initial stages and the Sovereign Resort within Sydney will kick off next year as well.
Right, okay. And what's remaining on the Gold Coast project?
Well, the remaining piece is, I haven't got the exact numbers at hand for next year, Mark, but primarily the Gold Coast is the biggest chunk of the CapEx for next year.
Okay, great, thanks.
So, Mark, the picture looks very exciting that you've got there, but it's actually relatively cheap to build the shell out.
Yeah.
All the big bills are coming in now.
Yeah, sure, thanks.
The next question is from Rowan Sundrum of Citi. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, just on Treasury, can you please elaborate what strategies you have in place, other than marketing, to improve that main floor performance or the property performance?
Yeah. Look, other than marketing, the scope for dramatic change is limited. Right? We have another 4 years or so to run in that property. So any capital investment is going to be very hard to justify. We have authorised an investment into an upgrade of the private gaming rooms, which, you know, just need to be upgraded and just improved in terms of the standards. But that's pretty much all we can do to the physical property in the time being. There's some maintenance, of course, that has to happen, but that's as far as we can go, given the new facilities that are coming on. We've put in place a chief operating officer to totally dedicate himself to that property and drive up the performance. And the big lever, I hate to tell you, is going to be marketing. The reality is the customers haven't disappeared. We've just not given them enough reason to come into the property and play here and play with us, in the knowledge that they can really take advantage of the facilities in the Gold Coast. And that's where the loyalty system comes into play, because that's the vehicle through which we can deliver and communicate the benefits of the new facilities in the Gold Coast that are also available if you play in Brisbane. And not enough in our stats, when we look at them, there's not as many people as could redeem their benefits in the Gold Coast.
Thanks, Matt. That's good. And my second question is, where do you feel you could do more around tourism? Understand that hotel bills are a big part of it, but in the near term, do you feel there's anything you can do to better capture that benefit?
Yeah. Look, there's a program of work that's underway for us to do more of that. I mean, the reality is, you know, the tourism numbers continue to grow, and so we know that the people are in the country, but we also know that they're pretty time poor. So the challenge for us is to build up the awareness of the customer, the awareness of our properties and what we have to offer, prior to them leaving the country. And so what we'll be doing more of is driving more on the digital and social media front to build up the awareness of our properties.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
Your next question comes from Anthony Longo of CLSA. Your line is now open.
Good morning, Matt. Good morning, Chad. Look, just a couple of questions from me. On OPEX, it's obviously a pretty good result this year. Are you able to give a bit more detail as to what you've specifically done in terms of keeping that OPEX down, notwithstanding, you know, that increase in marketing costs and other things that you flagged?
Anthony, pretty good. It's awesome. You look at the five-year expense performance. I mean, that's how, you know, I'm so serious here, because what we've tried to communicate through the year was to say, you know, we try to build a company now that is very diligent and continues to every year eke out efficiencies. And as I look into 2018, there is a program of work that has very specific targets to generate additional efficiency through automation, and in particular through automation and in computerization, that allows us to drive out that efficiency. And so that's why I'm very happy that we've been able to deliver that in light of the deliberate investments that we've made. The big lever for us will always have to be around labor cost. Right, so 65% of our cost is labor, so we have to continue to find productivity improvements in everything we do. And, you know, there is, as far as I can see, no shortage of opportunities for us to continue to get to them. You know, we have to do that in light of continued expansion of the properties. And so it's a fine balance. And, you know, I think we've taken about $90 million worth of cost out over the last 2 years in discrete areas, $90 million, and I think that's a pretty good performance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Sorry, I probably should have said awesome, Matt. So sorry about that.
Thank you, Anthony.
And I guess in terms of that cost focus going forward, do you have sort of similar plans, or are you able to give a bit more colour as to? I know the question was asked earlier, but in terms of actual more efficiencies coming out per annum.
Yeah, so Anthony, yes, absolutely. You know, as Matt's pointed out, $90 million in the last 2 years. You know, we continue to target to eliminate the impact of CPI growth on our business through initiatives that we have. We have well in excess of 40 initiatives in a bunch of different areas within our business. It's about, as Matt's pointed out, maximising efficiency across our workforce. Maximising our hotel rates that we have, maximising our cash versus comp hotel rates, looking at covers and pricing of covers, etc., across our F&B outlets. So there's a number of initiatives that drill down there that we see will continue to generate value not only next year but the years beyond that as well. Is that we have not reach the bottom of the opportunity within our cost and our efficiency opportunities.
Oh, that's great. Thanks very much. And just a question on VIP. So you mentioned VIP ex North Asia. That's had a pretty good result, another strong result this year, given the growth. How much of this is, what percentage of VIP is that now? Because I know your target is roughly about 25% of total.
Yeah, we're very close to that.
Okay, that's close to that now.
And so we might have to just Anthony, so the 25% was sort of an aspirational target early on that we set. But, you know, as we look at the opportunities and you know, that's probably undercooked. Now it's also close to 25% because North Asia has come back so much. So you know, once North Asia comes back a bit more, the stretch will get greater. But we're doing a bit more work around, you know, what is the real market potential and does a really diversified business mix look like for us? And I'm not sure 25% has to be the right answer in perpetuity.
Yeah, okay, sure. And I guess final question for me, just on Premium Mass. So the question was asked earlier, but are you able to remind me as to how the profitability of Premium Mass compares with the normal VIP or your traditional VIP numbers?
Yeah, so... significantly higher than a traditional VIP number is premium mass. Obviously, we're not sending the jets over for them, which are a high cost base. We're not giving credit as well that reduces the amount of bad debt risk exposure that we have within it. So, you know, we should think somewhere around 10% higher than a standard kind of VIP customer within a premium mass customer.
And you know, if you want to think about a premium mass customer, it's kind of, that kind of looks like one of our private gaming customers who, rather than aggregating their play over a year, does it over a week. But our reinvestment and our profitability is very similar.
Oh, that's great. Thanks very much. I appreciate that.
So just on recapping a question earlier in the call from Mark Wilson, just on the mix between CapEx for next year and the roughly $400 million we've highlighted, about 60% of that will be related to the Gold Coast and completion of the new Suites Hotel. So over $200 million of that will be completion of Gold Coast next year.
Okay. I think there's no more questions. I want to thank you for your time, and I'm sure I'm going to see many of you over the next couple of days in group meetings and one-on-ones. Thank you very much. Talk soon. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.